though of course we appreciate now that the broader policy issues will be finalized today, I think the Safety and Security Committee will take primary responsibility. Join us, mercifully, only this evening. And mercifully was a joke, Dion. Okay. Now, Ms. Kaleka, Mr. van der Merwe, Mr. Jobert, and Mr. Sibanyoni are not here, and they've tendered their apologies, no doubt for legitimate reasons. Does an MP ever not attend a portfolio committee for any other reason but a legitimate one? I want to welcome in particular Evan Meshwe. I think that he's good to have a party leader here, as big as the party is. That's a joke. Remember to activity. He has to leave, unfortunately, at 10:30. But to be fair to him, he's been very, very involved in this process. And today he's going to get very sad, I suspect. But, we will come to that in a moment. Having said that, we will hopefully meet till... our aim is firstly to go through the report, which every party received. It's dated 21st of September. It reads Principles and Models of an Effective Organized Crime Fighting Unit. And this is a paper that I think many, if not all, of our parties took our respective party caucuses last week. And the aim was to come back today and start with just agreeing that this report should be adopted. And then we'll ask each party to speak on its particular model. And then we will... decide on which model as a majority we are going for, and then what we're going to do is ask the officials who went far beyond the mandate given to them, the two technical experts, but many of the things they said are valuable, and they were preempting the parliamentary committee. We don't operate like that, and Willie in particular should know, as a former member of parliament, and we are pleading with the technical experts that it's not worth sliding things in. You know, I've got four eyes, and JJ's got four eyes, and there are so many members. Look, we all got four eyes, and Dr. Delport does, and so does Steve. So, you know, so does Baba Pandlova. It's not going to happen. Just close the process down. You have to be guided by what the committee agrees on. Anything you say beyond what the committee's agreed on, you're free to say as technical expert, but it's got to appear as an annexure in bold. So those are ideas you're giving us beyond what we suggested, and we're very prepared to listen to you because you are here for that reason. Is Gary Pinard not here? Do you know why Gary's not here? Can you just phone him and check? Maybe the committee didn't send out notices to everybody in the rush. I don't know what rush, because we haven't met for 2 weeks. But anyway, no, we did meet last week on other issues. Can somebody check where Gary Pinard is? Sorry, Dr. Delport?
No, I'm not tendering to check where Gary is. No, I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you. I tried to get your attention. Mr. Sibanyoni and Mr. van der Merwe and myself are busy this week with a reference group on pardons, and I've excused myself there, and Ben will chair my when I'm not there. But obviously I would like to get back as soon as possible, and I will not be able to join you on the race tomorrow because I'm tied up.
Remain while you explain to us which model you went for. So we'll take you first, and then you can leave. Who's here from Itasa? Well, you can come and sit next to Willie Hoffmeyer. Are you a technical expert on Scorpion?
I think she's come to take notes.
Oh, she's taking notes. Oh, okay, all right. Okay, that said, can we then say that at 1 o'clock, the ANC members of a task team are meant to meet in E340. I think you know who you are. You've been sent notices. The next thing to say is that we are leaving today to go and see the DSO tomorrow and the SAPS the day after. I think when Maggie's here, we'll go through exactly why we're going, and we will table our reports to them and so on. So I think wait for Maggie comes. But in the meanwhile, Jeremy is a bit worried that all of you know your flight details, and he has put into an envelope your flight details program. And we will fine-tune the SAPS program, but the DSO program is very clear. They're very keen to have us tomorrow, I must say. Okay. Having said that, let's then go on to tell the justice people that on a 10th, is that right, Carol? Yeah. To also inform justice people very quickly before you go to the Dalpo, I'm sorry, just half a minute. One is the PAJA rules and the PAIA rules we would like to finish before we rise. The Legal Aid Board's guide must reach Parliament by next week. We want to vote on it by the last weekend of October, so that it's adopted in the House. Criminal Procedure Act, JJ, quickly, where are we?
basically, we need a meeting. We're needing the amendments from the department. Yeah, it should be fine.
Site matters. He's not here, I see. He will report back to us. But the five reports that we've adopted, absolutely every issue either has to be finalized or fed into an exit report for the incoming committee. Willie?
He was on the same SAA flight that was cancelled in Joburg this morning, so he should be here shortly.
How come you got here? Oh, okay. I see Baba Makwena is coming in. Welcome. Do you want to come and join us here? No. Okay. Right, let's deal with the... Ah, yes. Parliament, as you know, has adopted... The other one, it's a tactical one. If we dump Parliament with both... To the justice people, the Human Rights Commission has got one vacancy. Parliament adopted a resolution on Friday, where ad hoc committee is being set up in the next 24 hours. It's meant to process the advert for this weekend, if that hasn't been done already, and move fast on that so that we can vote, if all goes well, relatively soon to replace the commissioner that resigned a year or so ago. Thank you. Right. Now, the report is before you, and you've all been through it as committee members. Nobody came back with any proposed amendments. So can I ask finally whether there are any proposed amendments to the text? Nope. So can I put this for formal adoption as a report of the committee? It's now a subcommittee. This report was given to all committee members, so you've all had close to 10 to 12 days to look at it. 21st of September, it's now the 30th, 9 days at least. Any mover, please? Baba? Yeah.
Version one is when you do the first version, and then when you've done the 10th version, it's version
two. Problem is, the person who did the first draft, you know, I've tried to explain to her that these things are too technical. When you try to remove it on a computer, it doesn't. I mean, you know, I can't do it, but what can we do? Parliament won't listen. So this is not version one. It's about version five. Now, version five then. Okay, we'll change it. Can we change that to version five, please? Having amended it so proposed by the brilliant, insightful John Jeffrey Esquire, can we move on the adoption of the report? Baba Ndlovu? Seconder? You don't have to agree with the model. Okay, nobody wants a second. Can I second? Is the rule allowed me to second? Okay, I'll second. Okay. Presumably the ANC doesn't agree with the report, so as chair, can I second it? Okay, thank you. Next thing is, let's go now with each party. Let's start with the DA. You discussed this paper, presumably in some form or another, and you want to tell us which model you went for. Can I say before we move on that this will be translated into the report to Parliament. We'll take excerpts from this report and say that there were five models considered by the committee. These are the five models, etc. And then as a majority, the committee decided on model 24 or whatever. But this, can I alert? I've got to do it. Who's got a content advisor? Between you and me, we have to put this into the report. Okay. So even if you find that the model you like has not been accepted, it's not as if the debate ends here. It's going to be reviewed over time, and we will put the models into the report. Okay? Thank you. Right. Dr. Delport?
Chairperson, the DA has always favored the scorpions to continue to exist. That has been our view. We are not blind to the deficiencies and the problems that did arise. So we are still going to go for Model 1 with some improvements gained from the Kampepe report, with one exception, and I'm not going to go into any detail now. But we would favor Model 1. We think it worked. We must retain the best and remedy any possible defects. We must improve the cooperation between various interested departments that you could call stakeholders. We must even improve the independence to a certain extent, but that is our view. We have taken note of some of the parties that have already announced a preference. Now, whichever model the committee may decide upon, as members of the committee, we are in duty bound to implement, to see that that model would implement the principles that we have agreed to after quite long and intensive discussions. So some of the models, especially model number 4, will need quite substantial amendments in order to comply with our own requirements that we set. We, as the DA, are happy to go along with the principles, and we know that in the event of the model that we prefer is not the one eventually adopted, then we will give all our support to working on whatever model the committee may decide upon to see that the outcome would be the best possible in the circumstances. That's our approach.
As far as Model 1 goes, the improved DSO model, which is presumably the one you support, is this an accurate reflection of what you would like? You don't want to add anything to it.
We always say, Chairperson, the devil is in the detail, but as an outline, yes.
Thank you, Chair. From the ACDP side, we too will support Model 1. Whilst we were tempted to also consider Model 2, we believe that they are the benefits, but we will go with Model 1. We believe that the present model has proven successful. We do also fully concede that there are deficiencies in the DSO that have been identified by the Compare Pay Commission. We believe it should be improved upon. Our main concern relates to preventing damage to existing cases, that such as the large Fidentia case, the large Johannesburg consolidated investment case. These have been estimated that they'll take up to 10 years. So we are a bit concerned about the losing of the prosecutor-driven investigation capacity, and that is the reason why we will support Model 1. We also believe, in the light of Chris Nicholson's judgment, which may well go on appeal, the highlighting of the independence of the National Prosecuting Authority is another benefit for keeping the DSO under the National Prosecuting Authority. Thank you, Chairperson. But we will obviously contribute, as we have done in the past, to looking at whatever model is accepted by the majority.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are going for Model 2, and we have seen Model 2, and it encompasses 1, 2, and 4, but most part of Model 2 is our model that we think encompasses everything. We think it's better that we deal with Model 2 because we are looking at the role of the board, we are looking at the different issues in different models. And specifically, we are looking at the political interference in Model 2, and we are looking at independence. And independence, we are very strong on independence because we don't want anybody to interfere whatsoever, no matter who he is or what position he holds. That is Model 2. We are going for it. And the document as it stands here, we do approve it. We will work with other parties in whichever model we like, but we will urge all members, including the ANC to look at Model 2 as the model that should be taken forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, although I proposed Model 5 and largely as a sort of a political compromise to stop all the argument about who's controlling who is investigating who, and all that sort of things, our preferred model is Model 1, as far as the Freedom Front Plus is concerned, because we believe, Chairperson, that the real success of the Scorpions was in the fact that there was prosecution-driven investigations. Now, if I went through the models, and if I look, for instance, at Model 4, we still have a problem as far as that is concerned, although prosecutors can take part in an investigation, in the end, it must be handed over to another prosecutor, as far as Model 4 is concerned, because that is how we see it there. So we will not support Model 4. Let I put that up front. So the first prize is Model 1. And I must say, Jefferson, we've spent quite a lot of time on these two bills. And I'm still of the opinion, sorry to say to you, that I think it was a matter of the ANC that must ensure that we go through all the procedures to prevent a court case. And I think Maggie was quite honest when she said to Parliament and to the people of South Africa that the decision has been taken at Polokwane, and we will stick to it. In the end, if I look at it, we're going to stick to that, and the Freedom Front Plus will surely not support that.
Can I just quickly report back? I thought Gigi might do it, but he will add. Firstly, I must explain, in fairness, that the climate, or let's say, a full, thorough consideration of all five models was obviously and understandably reduced by the tumultuous events over the last 2.5 or so weeks, beginning with the Chris Nicholson judgment. As the co-chair, my co-chair is not just, well, she won't be able to speak for herself because she won't know what I said, but I speak on behalf of both of us, and presumably the ANC comrades here might want to add. But I was a bit surprised, I must say, speaking for myself, others can add, at the extent to which people did engage around the models. You must remember it was Thursday morning, and, you know, there was a huge sort of sense of awe and expectation about what was going to happen that day. Understandably, your average MP was also wondering what the prospects were of him or her replacing the cabinet ministers that have vacated their positions. It's perfectly human. But notwithstanding all that, can I stress, notwithstanding, I know what the press is going to say. Right, so I would like to stress, and it'll go down on record, notwithstanding all of that, it was quite remarkable that people did engage. And the discussion took longer than personally I'd anticipated. Now, what came out of it is that Models 2 and 4, we did not suggest otherwise, would be more seriously considered. Model 5, frankly, just wasn't sellable. And what I want to ask Peter to think about, given that he's now opting for Model 1, does he really want to put into the final report Model 5 in its full sense? We can just say there was a fifth ministerial model just mentioned in one paragraph instead of giving the same weight. You must think about this between now and the day we vote on the report. Withdraw Model 5.
I don't have to think about it, Jefferson.
You withdraw it?
No, I don't withdraw it.
Oh,
I wouldn't go through the whole process just to withdraw it in the end.
Oh, but
so you keep it in the
process.
In the report.
I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Don't get so heated up. I didn't understand you because you're supporting Model 1 now. So I thought you were foregoing Model 1. First prize is Model 5.
I said the first prize is Model 1, Jefferson. And I said, we proposed Model 5, the ministerial model, as a compromise. That is what I said. So I said, the first prize is Model 1.
Oh, I thought you said
I understand your level of performance is also a couple of levels higher because the television is here, Jefferson. I understand that.
But the television is not here. No, you're being very honest.
No, well, it's close to you. Maybe it makes you...
No. Look, do you want to challenge me on the most outrageous proposal? As if these things influence me. I speak my mind freely, even sometimes challenging my own party. So, really, it's very under the belt. It's outrageous, actually. But you can hold that because the cameras are shining on you right now, so you have to make a case for your party and so on. But let's be frank. Does it make any logical sense, doesn't to me, that you're saying Model 1 is your first prize, but you're offering a more unsellable Model 5. Do you really think if you came to power, you will actually create a new ministry when the entire tendency is towards rationalizing ministries? Can you suggest to me where in the world...
If the Freedom Front Plus comes to power, it will make quite a lot of changes.
Yes, but would you...
As the ANC is at this moment.
Right, well,
you're entitled to your opinion.
Yes, I'm entitled to my opinion.
But I can just
argue around the usefulness of the model, which I'm entitled to do.
Didn't we discuss it in the subcommittee? Why didn't you put those questions in the subcommittee?
And it's illogical.
Well, that's my misuse of the chair.
Right. Well, I'm telling you, it's not logical to say Model 1 is my first prize, but we'll settle for Model 5, which is only your party and absolutely nobody. It's the other way around. I thought you'll start by saying Model 5 is what you'd really like. But recognizing it's not sellable, that's what I thought you were saying. That's more logical, isn't it? Model 5 is what I'd like. But given that I recognize no party supports it, and given that it seems unlikely to happen, even 3 years from now, unless some earth-shattering experience happens in this country, I'll settle for Model 1, because at least two other parties won Model 1, and at least it's not creating a separate new ministry with a separate budget. That's logical. That's what I understood you to say. I misunderstood you, but having said what you said, it's your right to be illogical. No one in Parliament says you get voted into Parliament because you're logical. It's illogical. That's my view as a chair. We can agree to disagree.
Well, Chairperson, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sure.
Are you still going to give me 3 minutes of your time in the debate?
If you want, it's very logical.
Thank you. I just want to make sure. I'll take 3 minutes of your time. Thank you.
I just want to put that on record.
It's
very illogical, but you can speak your mind. It'll show how actually illogical it is. Any average person will come to that conclusion. So let's Christine, as meaningless as this is to me, that's fine. We can take my time to talk nonsense, but that's fine. It's all right. It's a democracy. That's what we fought for. Christine, right there, it's observing, Model 1 is the first prize. That's what the FF would like. But recognizing that it may not be acceptable to other parties, they would like to stick with Model 5. And mercifully, it'll be easy to dispense 3 years from now, whoever is sitting in this chair and whoever is the majority here. Having said that, can I move on to say that, in fact, what the caucus decided was that, strictly speaking, Model 2 and 4 were more sellable, as everybody knows. One's not hiding that. And the caucus decided on Model 4, but there are aspects of Model 2 that I have no doubt, as we fine-tune Model 4, there are aspects of Model 2 that are reconcilable with Model 4. And we need to work on that. And so I'm pleading with people who support Model 2 not to forego engaging rigorously around aspects or features of that model. It can be incorporated in Model 4. First point I'd like to make. Secondly, I want to tell you the other side of the argument is that there are some people, we're not sure to what extent they are significant strata of the caucus, and we will pursue this further through the appropriate structures of the study groups, feel that we should not use the words investigating prosecutor and prosecuting prosecutor. They feel we should, at least for the first parties, if I understand that correctly, and we'll engage with the relevant comrades, they feel that we should use the word legal advisor for the investigating prosecutor, to separate that from the prosecuting prosecutor, but it's not very clear. You know, in a caucus of 300 people or 250 people, it's difficult to know to what extent the people who said that actually carry a majority. But we said we'll apply our mind. The concept is accepted that the prosecutors would be co-located. It's a technical term, and to clarify that, what this means is exactly what it says in the text, but I'm especially clarifying this because there may be articles written in the paper that might misrepresent because of the technical nature of the terms. As I understand it, and JJ has to help me here, whatever the technical experts say, this is what we mean, so JJ, you and others will have to help. Model 4 says that basically it's an improved DPCI model. What it basically says is that the approach will be multidisciplinary, meaning it will include, now I am addressing the press, by the way, to clarify, Peter, just to tell you, I'm going slowly and clearly, I am addressing the press, and if you want, why don't you bring the camera right there and plonk it onto my face? Please come and do that, because now I am addressing the press, my job. Right, I'm paid to do this, to clarify. So now is the journalist all here? I don't follow you, but... Okay. Now, all the journalists particularly, you're here, right? So I'm explaining to you now. Basically, multidisciplinary means not just police investigators working on organized crime. Because of its specialized and complex nature, all parties accept as a principle, and certainly the ANT does too, that we will include. Interestingly, we're expanding. On the one hand, we're expanding far beyond the DSO. We're saying this new unit, organized crime unit, will include the South African Revenue Service, the Financial Intelligence Center, the other intelligence agencies are relevant to organized crime. Who else? Home Affairs, the immigration unit in particular. They will all be seconded to the unit. Customs and Excise. They will all be seconded. Seconded meaning, in SARS, I included SARS. Customs and Excise, they'll all be included in the unit as secondments. Yeah. Oh, sorry. They'll be included as secondments, which means that the relevant authority will recommend names. So, for example, when it comes to SARS, the head of SARS will recommend who from the relevant unit that deals with organized crime would work with the investigators in the new OCU. OCU means Organized Crime Unit. Similarly, Home Affairs, the DG and ultimately the minister will be accountable. They will recommend experts from Home Affairs who do work related to organized crime. And the same would apply, so it will be seconded. This means essentially that for operational purposes on a day-to-day basis, they will answer to the head of the OCU. But the political authority will remain their respective heads of department and their ministers. So the SARS person will be ultimately accountable to Praveen Gordhan, the SARS commissioner. The Home Affairs person who comes in will be accountable to the DG of Home Affairs and the ministers. But that's in the political authority sense. And they'll be recommended by those respective departments. They'll not be employed by the OCU. Is that correct, JJ? They'll be employed by the relevant department. They'll be seconded. And on a day-to-day basis, they'll work together. This applies to all the agencies relevant to organized crime, except for the prosecutors. Except for the prosecutors. The prosecutors will be co-located. I don't know what the technical term means, but as politicians, we understand this to mean, if that's not the correct word, then let's drop the word co-located. Secondments are clear. I've explained that. The prosecutors will not be within the unit per se. They will operate within the National Prosecuting Authority. However, the National Prosecuting Authority will establish a special directorate, which will comprise prosecutors who will work with investigators from the outset of an investigation in respect of organized crime. So there will be prosecutors specializing in organized crime. And within the special directorate, JJ, am I correct, they will have two components of prosecutors. Presumably, what we might call for now, investigating prosecutors, stroke legal advisors, and prosecuting prosecutors. Is that right, JJ? They'll both belong to the same special directorate within the NPA. They will be answerable both in an operational sense and in a political authority sense to the NPA. And to the extent the NPA is accountable to the minister, they will be accountable to the minister and the DG in the ultimate sense, and also Parliament. You'll see we've got many features where Parliament will actually be playing a much more active role than is currently the case. So to summarize, all other relevant agencies dealing with organized crime will be seconded by the relevant departments. Operationally, they're answerable to the OCU. Politically, they're answerable to the department that seconded it. In the case of the special prosecutors, there are two components, investigative prosecutor, stroke legal advisor, prosecuting prosecutor. Both belong to a special directorate within the NPA and are answerable to the NPA, but will work with the investigator from the outset of investigation. The, Chidi, do you want to add? Have I left anything out? Okay, so that's it. Now, the other features that strengthen this model are things that all of us agree on. We all agree there should be an ministerial committee that will be far more effective than the current one in the current NPA Act and in the current processes. It'll meet at least, it'll be chaired by the Minister of Justice. It's chaired by the Minister of Safety and Security. I think we're moving in the direction of saying the deputy should be the Minister well, for now, let's see, we agreed on what we agreed. I'll just report on what we agreed, which is it's going to be the Minister of Safety and Security. Now, if you look at Model 4, it is not, Peter Kroonefal, we just have to agree, it is not the bill before us. What we have done is it's a substantial improvement on the bill before us. In the first respect, although this new OC will be located within the DSO and answerable to the Minister of Safety and Security, the powers allocated to the OCU are substantially greater than currently exists in the bill. The current bill is weak and limp and borders on pathetic, actually. It will not pass any test of providing for a more effective, organized crime-fighting unit. It won't. So we are decisively clear. The opposition parties are free to disagree. We reject, in no uncertain terms, the bill that is before us. We think it's a weak bill. We actually feel the bill was not thought through carefully and, frankly, it's just not on, to put it mildly. We're saying there should be no separate crime intelligence function. Because the new unit will be located within the SAPS, they need to work closely with the SAPS and other crime intelligence or related intelligence agencies. Unlike in the bill, which provides that the commissioner, I think, appoints the head of the OCU at the level of a divisional commissioner, we say no, no, no. We're saying the head must be appointed by the minister after consultation with the SAPS National Commissioner, and appropriate amendments should be made to the SAPS Act as a whole to provide for that. We are looking into what role Parliament can play in receiving a report, at the very least, on who's appointed and to check whether such a person is appropriate. The vetting of employees, I think we all agree. The need for a strong interministerial committee to monitor the OCU and to ensure coordination across departments as necessary, I've covered. Need for a strong interdepartmental coordinating committee to ensure operational coordination across departments. A mechanism, you'll be pleased to know, those of you who have raised this thing, to ensure no political bias in the operation of the OCU. Now, members, all of us agree on that, so can we all help? Even if we recoil from Model 4, let's help to see how we can do that. Complaints mechanism related to that, to deal with complaints against the OCU as a whole or staff members, how can we strengthen that? Adequate budget and resources, effective and regular parliamentary oversight. By this we mean at least four times a year, this unit must report to Parliament, to the Safety and Security Portfolio Committee, and its annual report will be in the public domain. Its report will be a sub-report, presumably we'll discuss that as we get more technical about where that report, is it part of the SAPS report or a separate report. But certainly, in consultation with the head of the OCU and the National Commissioner as appropriate, there will be consideration for some meetings to be open and some to be closed. The closed meetings will be in the form of the rules of Parliament, which provide, like for the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, because some of the issues that will be discussed will be very sensitive and might involve specific cases and so on. Now, we are utterly clear. Steve, I think you must help in this regard. We need comprehensive transitional provisions, including cases. So we, as the ANC, are just as concerned as you are to deal with cases like the Fidential thing and so on. And we think the transitional provisions are especially weak, frankly pathetic in the bill. So we have to deal with staff, budget, assets. Partly our visit to the DSO tomorrow is meant to foster a greater understanding of what their concerns are. We are going to put in the bill and or in the report that the model should be looked at 3 years hence, from the time at least of its implementation, to see if further improvements are required. We're not going to overhaul the whole model. We're going to add to it. So basically, Comrade Maggie, what I've done is simply take them through the... They have explained, I'll brief you in a moment, the DA wants Model 1, ACDP Model 1, IFP Model 2, but they're very concerned about political interference. The Freedom Front, interestingly, said, let me understand, they're saying their first prize is Model 1, but they're offering Model 5 as a compromise. Yeah, that's what they're saying. Now, to reply to specific concerns of the parties, the DA says model 4, but they need further improvements. Yep. Can you help us? Okay? Can you help us? We're very keen to hear from you. We want improvements. We just set out the features. We think it's model 4 is still a long way to go, and we need to move on that and tighten it. No, model 1, yes, but they're saying that they want, yeah, they said they want model 1, but insofar as model 4 goes, they want improvements. So we're saying yes. And there are some things in model 1 that we can still include in model 4. So let's engage rigorously. The ICDP, the ACDP says model 1, they worried about damage to existing cases, we agree. On the IFP says model 2, no political interference, please Baba help us. We're just as concerned. Look where our party is today. So we don't want to go through it again. Freedom Front says model 1, preferably, but they don't want to, they're going for model 5 as a compromise. They feel that we've been through the procedures just to meet the needs of the Constitution. I'll repeat what we've said before. Even if that's true, that was simply the motion. So what? We're showing that we respect the Constitution and the procedures of Parliament. So what? Yes, so what? I mean, that's good. Thank you for telling us that, because what it shows is that we are abiding by the Constitution and we are abiding the rules and norms of Parliament, and that's very good. And like every major bill, we took it to caucus and we explained the context in which it went there. We don't agree. I think I've covered this already. It's simply the DPCI model. I think, Peter, you must just agree to disagree. You can refer it to your researchers if you like, but I mean, it's a substantial improvement on model 4. On model 3, that's before us in the committee. Right. Having said that, do the ANC members want to add? Have I left out anything? Have I given a tweak or nuance that really is not reflective of the caucus as a whole? Starting with JJ. Anybody else want to say anything? Comrade Maggie, you'll take over. Comrade Maggie's just come in from a flight. Sorry? JJ is busy at breakfast. Okay. Is there anything people have? No. Right. If that's the case,
issue of the labor relations, because I understand you're going to be discussing, and that's obviously an issue.
Under transitional provisions. Can we add?
Labor relations and the VSP's consideration of that as a possibility. That is obviously.
Can we do that? Can we just amend the report, man? You know that the report we've done, Christine, under transitional provisions, can you just add there? I think we should mention that. Labor Relations Act and the transitional provisions and what's the other thing you said? For VSPs. So can we just adopt that amendment, because that is our final report now. Okay? So do you want to move for the adoption? Seconder? Carol, you accept. Okay, good. So that's our report with the amendments you're suggesting, right? So now, we're going to actually ask the technical experts to assist us now. You did some work, which was we can give to members of, it was very difficult to read actually, and it has a table, and I don't see a problem in giving it to members, but we just give it to members. But I must tell you, I couldn't follow it and couldn't understand it, and it was very difficult, and we, all the parties agreed that looked at it, meaning within the ANC and the department, is that right? That we, unfortunately we're not technical experts, and it's difficult to understand it. But having said that, can we start with Willie and Prince to tell us what was in that report? And if you can write it in like comprehensible English in the next 24 hours, what was in your report that is not included in the final text we did as MPs? Secondly, I know, Prince, you feel very strongly about Model 2, and so to some extent does Willie. Now, we're saying we're not opposed to aspects of Model 2 to the extent they're consistent with Model 4. So are there things there that you think can be reconciled with Model 4? So who wants to start? You know what I would suggest to save time is that whatever you say to us now, that's the report we should give to members. But if members want, Lolly, their very good but very difficult to understand report that we had to redo, we can give it, there's no problem. Whoever wants it can have a copy. But I'll urge ANC members, go and campaign and so on. It's not worth reading that report. It's rather more important to read their next report. In other words, they're going to tell us Model 4 has these weaknesses, and it can be complemented by the following things. And then they write full English sentences. Okay, so let's start. Who wants to start, Prince or Willie?
Thanks. I must say I was not expecting that question.
I had communicated that to you 10 days ago. Sorry, okay, it's fine.
Not that question specifically. Your document does represent the report that we produced. The only difference is that ours went into greater details, outlining the roles of, for example, the board. And your document summarizes, but the spirit is the same. Now, with regard to what is it that is in Module 2 that could be included in Module 4, I think the concept of the board, somehow I would urge this committee to find a way of including it under Module 4 in order to ensure, one, accountability, two, the protection of the unit, have a mechanism that will protect the unit from political interference, because that has been the main bone of contention. As I listen to debates and as I recall the submission that we made as the institute in particular. Thanks.
Just a quick thing to facilitate discussion. If you have the board, how will it be distinct from the IMCC, Comrades Friends Interministerial Committee, and how will it be distinct from the Operational Interdepartmental Committee? And how will it be different from the Independent Complaints Mechanism dealing specifically with this unit?
So, you will recall that the proposal that we made, Vili and I, back then, we had a discussion in terms of how to harmonize this concept of the board and my concept of the board. But you'll remember that the view that I shared with the committee was that the board I had in mind would do three things. Number one, it would serve as an integrity assurance mechanism. Number two, it would serve as a case review mechanism. Number three, it would serve as a complaints mechanism. If you look at all those three things, in my view, cannot entirely be done by the Ministerial Coordinating Committee, nor the Complaints Directorate. So that would be, in my view, the specific role that the board would do. It would not deal with operational matters. Neither would it deal with governance issues, because politicians must take responsibility for governance. But the board would purely play the roles that I've outlined, that making sure that even in the case where politicians have complaints, they can run to this board, which is neutral, not attached to the governance structure of the unit, to say, I am a politician, I have a complaint against whoever, and that board will be competent to deal with that. And that would apply to senior officials as well.
Thing. I'm just facilitating, okay, to clarify, so that we pass. Why do you want to call it a board then? Why don't you call it a mechanism, some other name? Board is a very lofty name, firstly. Secondly, who would appoint this board and how?
If it were to deal with complaints only, it would then be a complaints mechanism. If it were to deal with case review, if it were to handle review cases only, it would be a case review mechanism. But the fact that it combines these three components, then in my view, it straddles a little bit beyond what you could simply describe as a mechanism. So for that reason,
I think it's a good argument.
Yeah.
Then the next thing is who will appoint it.
The appointment. My view, and I'm thinking while running here, my view would be that such a board should be appointed by Parliament through a similar process that is followed when you appoint the SABC board. But the difference thereof would be I wouldn't take it to the level of the president signing ultimately. I would take it to the Minister of Safety and Security signing. Thanks.
I just ask you, I'm just clarifying, right, so that we clear what we're dealing with. The next thing I want to ask you very quickly, who you said before, you still hold by that, that the head of the board should be a judge, or not necessarily?
Yes, I suggested, and I still stick to that, because such a board would deal with complex legal matters. Now, you need someone, firstly, with a legal background, two, with integrity and high profile. And I proposed specifically that you should have a retired judge leading such a board, but retired judge. But the composition of such a board, as I proposed earlier on, should be based on the principle of representation of relevant factors to the work of the unit. So you would have experts from the banking sector, for example, high profile someone from the banking sector who's going to sit there. You would have someone from the research sector, for example, who would sit there, but crime-related research sector would sit there. So all I'm saying is that it has got to be representatives of relevant sectors. I wouldn't give you names, but as a general principle.
Very lucid, and thank you. Very good. Whether we agree or not, it's neither here nor there right now. It's very good, very clear. Integrity assurance, he said this before, case review, complaints mechanism.
Because just the case review, what's the purpose of that? I mean, obviously it would be linked to a complaint, which would then result, or could be linked to a complaint, which could result in the case being reviewed. But if there's no complaint, I mean, maybe just give more detail on the case review.
Vida and I, we shared with the committee that it is not an ordinary case review process. It is meant to handle high-profile cases when there is a need. And we gave the example of the reviewing of the case of Commissioner Silebo, who's on extended leave. But when Advocate Nte had to relook at that file, He consulted people outside the NPA, legal minds, to advise him. But he said perhaps it is necessary to institutionalize that kind of a process in the context of this board that we're proposing. But not just any ordinary case. In the case of high profile controversial cases, the board would then serve that role. But we also went further to say it does not necessarily mean that the board will do it itself. It may appoint a subcommittee of experts relevant to that case to advise it, and therefore and say this case can go to court or you should charge or not. Because if you do not have such a mechanism where you have controversial cases, high profile, then anybody and everybody within the unit, the NPA as we have observed, is involved, and you don't have an outside mechanism that is poised as a neutral actor to deal with such a case. So it's mainly high-profile cases, but not any other ordinary case.
Yeah, sorry, you had more questions. Go ahead. Okay, Bulalan, we come back to JJ. Let's interrogate this thing. We're not going to keep coming back to issues. Let's hear from other people.
I will propose that we finish, but my question is on a different matter, on a dissolution of the board.
Finish. It was just again the review mechanism. I mean, obviously the decision around whether to prosecute or not is with the national director, and they can, if they're not sure, consult other people, get some kind of review mechanism. There's examples of that having happened in recent cases, in particular also the one that you mentioned, but others. So, and is that not part of their decision whether to prosecute or not? So I'm not sure why you want it in the board. I can see from a complaints point of view that somebody comes along and says, look, I feel I'm being
unfairly investigated and prosecuted. But I'm not sure, but that's then part of the complaints mechanism. But I'm not sure if it's, I can't sort of see why you need that function when the National Director of Public Prosecutions can do it anyway. And if you join the two, if you join a complaints mechanism with normal case review, even if it's of more high profile cases, then are you not overlapping two roles? You might want to say, look, a high profile case needs to be needs to be taken on very carefully, but then if you allow a board to some extent run a high profile case, are you not allowing space for political interference? Outside interference.
Chair, we've agreed that I'll try and answer the question. Maybe I've got more practical experience of these things. I think there are two functions, as JJ points out. I think the one is to deal with complaints against the way a specific investigation or prosecution has been conducted. I think the innovation, in a sense, that the ISS is suggesting is to say, can we also in some ways be proactive? Even in the absence of a complaint, when you are doing a certain high-profile cases, have a sort of, I think he's calling it a quality assurance, but giving everybody concern that there has been quality assurance. Remember, we're still talking about a model where prosecutors will be working relatively closely with investigators, even if not in a single line of command. So, you know, there may again be questions raised about whether prosecutors are too involved or not too involved and so on. But I think the mechanism is something that we do use from time to time in any event. You know, the NPA would... in a number of these cases, would go to a senior silk at the bar and say, please look at all of this case with a dispassionate eye and just tell us that we're not overlooking something here, that when all hell breaks loose afterwards, that it's, you know, that something hasn't been overlooked. I think that, as I said last time when we met in the subcommittee, that there is some difficulty if you're combining it with the complaints mechanism, because there may be subsequently a complaint in a case where it has already been quality assured. But my suggestion is that I don't think that it's a bad idea to try and build something in like this, but I wouldn't want to say that it is, in a sense, involves the board looking at the facts of the case. I think if one of the suggestions of Prince when we met was to say, let there be a panel of experts that the board can use from time to time, and all that those experts do when they've looked at the case is say, yes, we are happy that there is enough to proceed here, it's been well done, professionally done, within getting into the merits of the case. But, you know, so to some extent that the board has still got clean hands afterwards if they have to deal with a subsequent complaint. But I think it is a valuable role to try and build in somewhere into the process. You know, I do think that it's probably not something that should only be attached to the NPA and the prosecution decision. That's why I would think that one should look for some way of building it into the process.
Can we just take him, and of course I'll come to you because it's flowing directly, presumably, is it?
I mean, from what you're saying, it's common cause, the NPA can do it already, okay? And they can select who they want to go to for that review. And they would presumably select a person who's got expertise in that area. And people have different areas of expertise. So... A decision around a big organized crime case or the Fidentia case or a attempted coup in another country would all be different, and you'd have different experts. I can't see why then, if it's already provided for, and by the prosecuting authority, who are the people who, the only people who decide whether to prosecute or not, why you need it in this board. Because you're then, if you put it into the board, then you've got a problem of, okay, how is it going to be activated? Is the board going to look at every prosecution and say, no, we want to review this one or that one? So I have problems with the combination. I agree fully with the idea of, or I think there's a lot of merit in the issue of a complaints mechanism and having a review process where there's a complaint. But where there isn't a complaint, where the NPA already have that power if they want to decide whether to prosecute or not to get somebody else to review it, why do you need it here?
Chair, the same question could be raised. What is wrong in having it in the board? If the board is of the board, I'm answering. If part of the board is to ensure integrity of the prosecutorial function, what's wrong in locating a process like that, which is really meant to make sure that everything is watertight? And if you locate it in the board, a mechanism that is not attached to the unit, to the work of the unit, in my view, then it means you are actually providing a mechanism that will ensure legitimacy, that will ensure credibility, so that you don't say the NPA or the unit took this decision. Yes, it consulted its own people, but it was not checked by an institutionalized mechanism in a form of a board, which is there to ensure integrity. So I don't see why you can't locate it in the board. But anyway, at the end of the day, I think, JJ, you have the right to your view. Thanks.
Thank you for giving him the right, granting him the right. But can't we have Willie, because he's responding, then you can come back. We're coming to you. We haven't forgotten. It's just that I'll have a flow of discussion. Especially as you've honored us by coming here this morning.
Chairperson, we are also sitting in the reference group considering thousands of applications for people who want to leave the prison.
He's smiling. It's not a pleasant task, surely. Why are you smiling? You know your answer is slightly not... Well, okay, let me not say anything, in fairness to you. And where's the TV camera? Oh, they're there, okay. Peter, where's Peter? That's a facetious remark, by the way, needless to say. Although JJ speaks in such a deadpan voice, you never know, Comrade Che, whether he's joking or he's serious. Often when he's joking, he's quite serious. More serious than most people joke. Okay. Willie? Che, before we carry on, we have the Consul General of Canada here. Is that right? Welcome. I should have acknowledged you. I have no idea why you're here when your economy is in severe decline and you're having consequences, not least for little South Africa. But maybe that explains why the financial markets in the Americas are in dire straits. But anyway, that's the facetious part. Although, our facetious, I'm not at liberty to say.
Chair, I think that part of the reason why I was persuaded by what Prince said was that the very appointment of saying who is the expert who may advise may become contentious. So I think that it's not a bad idea. You know, I don't think the board should be in a position where it's looking at every case or the details of cases before they become public. But I think if it has some role to play in saying, even if one says this is a function that can be attached maybe more formally to the NPA. But I don't think it's a bad idea to say let the board then have some say in who some sort of agreed panel of experts are that would be consulted from time to time. I think one's really looking at situations where an institution becomes tainted in the public perception. And to the extent that those, whether it's the investigating arm here or the prosecuting arm, I think if one has a credible board here, which I think is the major point, to give it some role in this area, I think even if it's just to say we agree that these are good experts to look at it, or we have a panel that you could choose from, however one phrases it, I think it's not a bad idea to explore that idea, you know, to see how workable it is, how it works and so on. But I think the danger of leaving very sensitive decisions to one institution is that that, you know, whatever that institution does in the end may not be trusted. And I think that's part of the role of the board, is to give, to ensure that there is credibility to the processes.
Well, Alani wants to speak about decisions on the board, but let's take Kurt very quickly, because he might have to leave as well. We'll come back to you. I mean, to be fair, you've had pretty steady flow. Okay.
I don't want to leave quickly.
Oh, I thought you got that meet. Sorry.
Yeah, but my chairperson is also here, Dr. Delport, so when he leaves, I'll follow
okay.
you. Chairperson, I'm a bit concerned if I understand the function of this board correctly. Then if the prosecuting authorities make a decision to prosecute, then there's a complaint, and then the board must say whether the decision to prosecute was a good one or not. If that is correct, if I understand it correctly, then I think Prince said the board will ensure integrity and so forth and so forth. But my concern is you now remove the independence of the prosecuting authorities. You now have a system in between to check whether they are taking the correct decision. That takes away their independence, and also I'm not sure how this is going to be done. Because if I represent a client and I say to the board, the prosecuting authorities took a wrong decision to prosecute my client, then surely there must be a form of a mini trial or something to decide whether there is in fact a case. Are we not then taking over the role of a court? So I don't like the idea of something in between the prosecuting authorities and the courts, because it destroys the independence of the prosecuting authorities, which was once again emphasized by Judge Nicholson.
Yeah, JJ, and we'll come to Bulalani because he's got a slightly separate issue.
No, look, I mean, I think the other fundamental difference is, remember that this is an investigating unit of the police. There may be prosecutors that are assigned to assist, but they are not the prosecuting prosecutors. So the decision to prosecute is not being taken by this directorate. It's being taken by the NPA. So why then do you need that decision reviewed effectively? And I think I agree with Quirce's points, and Quirce, I just want to say it's very nice having you with us. And sharing your wisdom with us, and I wish you could share it more often.
Thank you, JJ. It's not always nice to have you here.
That's a good one.
Nice question.
That's a good one. Look, I think we should be going to Bulalani, but can't we have, like, other people speak? Pavan Dlovu, Dr. Delport, Steve Swart. You know, I was quite compelled by what you said. For what it's worth, you know, when you're sharing, you're going to slap. Peter won't believe this, but one is slightly more objective, let's say, than a rabble-rouser like Bulalani. The fact of the matter is, I was really compelled, but listening to all the arguments, it gets less and less compelling, you know. But anyway, let's go ahead. I haven't personally come to any conclusion, not that Peter would believe it, whatever he is, but Bulalani? Gratitude.
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much, my lawyer. Two quick issues. My concern is you have these three institutions. You have the management structure, you have the interministerial committee, and then you have the board. But one of the ministers within the interministerial committee appoints the board. You're saying that the board...
Not if I'm correct. It's Parliament that appoints the board, and the final approval of the names has to be an executive, maybe, in which case, instead of the president signing off, the Minister of Safety and Security does. Is that correct? The board's appointed, Bulalani, by Parliament, by you and me, MPs.
I think that would be a recommendation. Yes, I think that would be a recommendation, not an appointment. The Parliament would recommend it for an appointment. Yes, that would be a recommendation. It will still be appointed by that person.
Finish, Bulalan. You see these traditional leaders, eh? Even when they're not traditional leaders.
Don't go there. Okay.
I think that is one of the points you can say. I'm not a rabble rouser. Yeah, my argument that Parliament will recommend, it will still be that minister who appoints. So it will be one of the ministers who appoint. A board that is supposed to be independent, appointed by one of the ministers in the ministerial committee. Then the other issue is that if that body is headed by a judge, how is it going to be dissolved? Because we've talked about the appointment, how is it going to be dissolved? And the dissolution, if it's by the minister, will also that constitute political interference?
Do you want to reply to that, Prince?
We'll share the questions. And Chair, I hear you saying that it becomes less convincing. I think we need to begin from a point of principle. Do we want to have a mechanism separated from the operational work, separated from a body of politicians that can intervene at some point to ensure integrity? That is a question of principle. Now, if we agree that we need such a mechanism, then we should go...
Dr. Delford, do you want to say something on this notion of a board? We're interested to hear what you think.
Well, once again, it depends on what powers exactly do we give to the board. But remember, when we talk about independence, let's take the example now of independence of the judiciary. It's so important. What rules are there to safeguard independence? But even more important, does the judge himself, does he want to be independent? Is he unbiased? You see, so many of these matters get an ugly turn if the incumbent official does not remain independent, at arm's length, somewhat aloof, objective. So we must always take into consideration that whatever we do, we're not going to invent a perfect system, because the people we're going to appoint will be human and they will not be perfect. So what we can do is to safeguard, to couch our structure in such a way that it tends to give weight, or that it tends to go into the independent direction, that we ever achieve absolute independence, absolute neutrality. It's not possible until we find a robot to act in that position. So what we must do is to try and put our heads together and look at what we are now doing, at also the difficulties with more than one structure that will influence the ultimate decision. And maybe we create more problems by having a multiplicity of important inputs into the final decision than to have a single a single structure that you hold accountable and responsible, and that you can call onto the red carpet, so to speak. So I have now not, you know, if I may quickly tell, when I used to lecture, I once explained to people how a judge must remain independent. I said he must never descend, I quoted, from a judgment, never descend into the arena because his vision will become clouded by the dust of the conflict. And in an exam paper, a student said to me, a judge must remain independent. He must never descend into the arena because he may cloud the issue by the dust of his vision. And I think that's what I have done now.
All right, okay. Very quickly, who is next? Prince, you want to finish your response?
We should not forget that...
Gary is also here now. I didn't realize. Yes, please, yeah.
Chair, I'd like to persuade this committee not to forget what makes this discussion important. What makes this discussion important, it is the imperfection of the DSO that we have observed. A DSO that had a ministerial coordinating committee that could not work properly because of the politics, you know better than me. Now, a DSO that could not work properly because officials could not work together. Now, so if you look at those two, you can already realize that sometimes problems would arise with regard to the Ministerial Coordinating Committee, and indeed in the past they have. Sometimes problems would arise with regard to the Coordinating Committee of Officials, and indeed in the past, although there was no structure like that, but problems arose with regard to officials. Now, the proposal then comes in. How then do we, in future, deal with such an eventuality? And we are proposing that let's have a separate structure, a board, which is not attached to the governance work of the unit, not attached to the operational work of the unit. So at a level of principle, that is the idea. Now we get to the detail. Questions are asked. Now, it is the role of the NPA to decide to prosecute or not. It is not the role of the unit. But the point is, and that's why there's in the principles that were agreed here in the subcommittee, that prosecutors still need to be involved in the work of the unit. Because there is a realization that prosecutors will add value in the work of the unit. Now, if you will have an element of prosecutors making a contribution to the work of the unit, now, in principle, what is wrong with having a board that will look at the work of the unit in conjunction with the NPA, which will still retain the powers and the role to decide whether to prosecute or not? So in my view, I don't see that. The second question is the independence of the NPA. I think our proposal seeks to actually achieve the direct opposite of what the Honorable is suggesting. It is to ensure the greater independence of the NPA. And remember what Vili said, that even under current circumstances, the NPA itself, on its own volition, does refer a case to senior counsel and say, look at it. Does that compromise the independence of the NPA? I would argue not. Now, in the case of the board, if the NPA itself says to the board, please, you have a body of experts that you work with, could you please let this body of experts advise us on our decision, which is this? Would that undermine the independence of the NPA? I would argue not. I don't see how. Maybe the Honorable would persuade me otherwise. Appointment by Parliament. I think, yeah, you can be innovative about it. You can go the route of Parliament completely appointing this board, so there's no ministerial involvement in it. I wouldn't go to war against that. You could also go the route of a minister finally signing, which would then come back to his point that then that would amount to a recommendation. But I'm not sure if you would argue that Parliament has no role, or you're not satisfied with the role of Parliament in the appointment of the SABC board. Now, there are two options. Parliament fully appoints, or Parliament recommends. So those are options that I would leave on your table. The last point, question, dissolution. If it is Parliament appointing, if you go that option, it means a mechanism will have to be found. A parliamentary mechanism will have to be found that would define how the board will be dissolved. I don't think that is impossible. If it is the other way, the minister finally appending a signature, also a mechanism will have to be found. But even in that context, I would still argue that Parliament would have to be involved in that process. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I wanted just to, you know, I think pick up on some of the things that Prince had said. I think that the principle is here that one wants some mechanism that can both try and ensure that this body can do its work independently, but secondly, a mechanism in a sense to protect the body from allegations that will be made against it in the future, that it's abusing its power or whatever those allegations are. And so I think, for me, I think somebody raised the issue, is this board not now going to relook at every case and second guess what's been done by the investigators or the prosecutors? I don't think so. That we're talking that the ICD, other bodies will still have jurisdiction here. But there are some allegations that I think are serious enough to warrant a board to look at them. Let's say there's an allegation that the president abused his powers. Now, it's very difficult to resolve that in the normal way in government. I think what you want to say, have a body here that is credible, that can look at these allegations and say they are true and can make a strong recommendation or insist that action is taken about it, if it is true. But on the other hand, also if it says, we have looked at this allegation, it is not true, that they are credible enough to be believed. So I don't think that one's looking at a body here in which every run-of-the-mill case is somehow going to have to be relooked. I think one is looking at a certain category of very serious allegations that are made. So I think that is broadly what I would put under the Prince's headings of dealing with complaints that are made about cases. I don't think the board would have to deal with every complaint. It would deal with those that are more serious, or very serious, I would say. And hopefully, once there's a board, there'll be less such complaints to deal with. But I think they will happen. I think the second issue that he raises is more on, in a sense, a proactive measure to say, before we announce a decision on a case where we know that there will be lots of controversy about that decision, can the board have some assurance that the work that has been done here, both the investigation work, that the investigation work has been done as properly as possible, that there's no unanswered questions here, that that the prosecution decision is sound. I think what one is suggesting in that context is that the board can say, can we get some advice here? It's not saying the NPA can't make the decision. It's not saying investigators can't investigate. But I think it is an ability to say, let us just take a second look at this decision. Whatever comes from a panel of experts is not an instruction. It's not saying to the NPA, don't prosecute. It's not saying to the investigators, you have to go and investigate this, but it may say, you're strongly advised to do it. Ultimately, the investigators will make a decision whether they're going to follow up further things or close certain loopholes. And the NPA, if there are certain weaknesses that are pointed out, will make a decision. Is it a real weakness or not? But I think that what it does do is to give you institutionally some protection to say, at least somebody independent has applied their mind, they've agreed with the decision. Even if they've disagreed, you can continue But it just gives you a bit of assurance, and I think that's why the NPA does it at the moment in certain cases. My argument for involving the board in this process would just be that if it is done at least under the oversight, or that they have a role in saying who the experts are, that protects one against allegations that you've just gone to cozy friends to get a view and that they will always disagree with you anyway.
Kerry, Yuan, Carol, Pulilani, JG, and then we're drawing to a close. One option is the committee can mandate you as a subcommittee chaired by JG to finalize this matter and report back to us. We just give you this all multi-party subcommittee can process this fast and come back to the committee with proposals. That's the direction I think Comrade and I are going to speak at the moment.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies once again for being delayed. I think to some extent some of the comments that Vili has made is covering some of the suggestions that I was going to make. But I'm hearing these concerns about what do we do with this multiplicity of bodies? Is that not going to complicate actual operations of this OCU? Concerns about interference with the NPA's mandate, but still a need for integrity assurance. And I'm wondering if, in one respect, the title that we've given to this entity of a board is perhaps confusing in itself, suggesting certain roles that perhaps we're not really wanting to allocate to it. And I was wondering if it might be appropriate to think about merging some of the roles of the board with the OCC, so that, in other words, you have perhaps some membership of the OCC drawn from civil society, even if the OCC is then possibly chaired by the board. Because I think some of the things that have come up in debates over the last month or year are not issues that are necessarily related to
the decisions. We've gone through that route, and we've said no.
Okay.
We said the OCC and the board can't be the same. We've covered that. I think you might not have been there on the last day.
Okay.
So unless members still want to entertain the idea, can I rule you out of order?
So right. Sure.
Anybody wants to still entertain the idea? No. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Then the last point then was just perhaps regarding the title that we give to this and the role that we give to it, possibly a panel at providing ad hoc advice in those sensitive cases to provide that when the OCC requests it.
I was going to suggest that we say board stroke agency stroke panel. I also think maybe members must think about it. I don't know that the board notion is a bit too lofty and specific for this thing, but I'm not saying we shouldn't rule it out. But let's have the next person, whoever is next. You are?
Thanks, Chairperson. I've been covered to some extent by what Vili has now said. I think part of the problem arose with the use of the expression review. In South African law, if you say a body has the power to review, it normally means that it's a reviewing authority. It has powers to set aside, to substitute, or to refer a matter back. And I do not think, and the examples being given about the NPA asking for opinions. Asking for an opinion from an issue is not to review your own decision, it's asking for an opinion. It's exactly that thing. And then the other thing I just want to raise, which is causing me some concern, but it's just a remark, is we're dealing with a unit being created in SAPS, in the SAPS Act. We've already got a separate unit then in SAPS. We've got an interministerial committee being created. We've got an operational committee, or the committee of heads of department, whatever we're going to call it, being created. We've already got an independent complaints directorate in SAPS. And we've also got a civilian secretariat in SAPS. And I must admit that personally I'm not too sure about the role and functions of that civilian secretariat. I do know, however, that they can, for example, demand access to any unit within SAPS. Dr. Howard Jacobs can help me if I'm wrong there, and it's one thing I want to flag. I think we need to look at whether this secretariat is going to have any role whatsoever to play in regard to this LCE, because there's also security interests coming to mind there. So I just thought we should be cautious. It's becoming, for me as a drafter, from the drafting perspective, a very complicated bureaucracy being established here.
Thanks. So just maybe to raise the question about if you have a board in terms of organized crime, what about other crimes? In the sense that you may have high-profile cases involving violent crime, sexual offences, treason, whatever the case, and put yourself in the position of the accused person. If I'm accused of being part of organized crime, I have recourse to the board. If I'm charged with treason, a sexual offence, I don't have recourse to the board. So there are two different dispensations, and I just wonder whether that distinction is reasonable and rational. And if it's
I was going to raise it in a roundabout way. I want the experts to tell us whether it's true that in organized crime, there's a need for greater review of cases than in any other form of crime. That's what I was going to ask later. But since you've asked...
I think I'm largely covered by the previous speakers. But what I can just say that, in my view, I think this board can be best suited in a situation where you've got a prosecutorial-led investigation. But now we're talking about a prosecutorial-guided investigation. So I, in my opinion, I don't think for this model that I advocate it will be appropriate. But if you maybe take model one, I think it might be appropriate. But I think for the model, the SAPS model, I don't think it will be appropriate.
Just along those same lines, I mean, I think what you want to, where there have been problems, what you're trying to address is problems with the investigations. And a need to have a mechanism to investigate whether a complaint. The Jacob Zuma's matter, which he took to the public protector, for example, that wasn't a problem with the prosecution. That was a problem with the investigation. Okay, that's the issue that you're looking at. Somebody else can say, look, I'm being investigated unfairly. There's been an investigation for 3 years into me, and I'm having my bank statements looked at. They can't find anything that's unfair. That's the complaints that we're talking about. Now, but we are not talking about complaints around whether a prosecution was instituted or not, because that is the NPA's function, and to interfere with that would be to interfere with their independence. So whether they want to consult with experts or not, and get their opinions, that's up to them. But you can't have a board saying, look, in this particular case, the investigation into Mr. Karim, and has he been illegally importing foreign CDs?
You want to find out who broke into my car the other way around on Monday night and in my house in Acacia Park. That's what you want, investigation to the criminals, not the victim.
No, I'm talking about, okay, we'll talk about then an investigation into somebody else. But look, yeah, so the investigation you'd want to
be on here, eh? Please, man, headlines. MPs harassed in Acacia Park. Done that already.
Didn't yield any results. No, but, okay, sorry, just summarizing sort of more. It's the issue is complaints against the investigation. You can't have complaints against the prosecution because that will be interfering with the prosecutorial discretion, and I think it will cause all manner of problems. Then I think that Mr. DeLange's point, I think there would be a general agreement that this needs to be a mechanism for dealing with complaints about the investigation. And then I think we've got to look at what are the existing structures. So Mr. DeLange's points, what are the existing structures? Are there other places that it can be covered? But I think because remember, this is not a prosecuting directorate we are setting up. It is an investigating directorate. They do the investigations. They get guidance from the prosecutors. There is that linkage, but the decision around whether to prosecute or not is taken by the prosecutors. And I feel actually the more one sort of debates it more strongly over the thing. I don't think you can build in an advisory structure, whatever, to give advice around whether to prosecute or not. That's the NPA's baby. They do whatever they want to do, consult whoever they want to do. That's their power. I mean, otherwise you're going to then start saying the minister can make an input into prosecutions. What would Judge Nicholson say on that? But that's ultimately where you're going.
Okay. Anybody else? Baba, you want to say anything before we give them a last shot to come back on this? And they must respond to everything at one go. Baba and Lovu, and then Steve Swan hasn't said anything.
I'm covered by what JJ has just said now, because we don't want to touch the independence of the NPA. And but what we are talking about is the external interference from outside, and the integrity of the should be insured, you see. And I'm not quite sure they have to respond to Carol's questions, because that is very important. A multiplicity of the organization that you can deal with it later on, because there are so many bodies within the SAPS that can work on it. Thank you very much.
Chair, I think there is merit in the suggestion, and I would. I hear JJ's concerns. It is an issue about possible exactly what function that board will play, to what degree there may be any form of interference in that. But I do agree with your recommendation that we shouldn't just push it aside, and that a subcommittee should look into the possibilities of incorporating a board and come back. We don't have the time to fully canvass all the various issues. It is an international best practice as well, it would appear, from other jurisdictions. So maybe we need to look a bit more carefully at the whole issue of a board from the subcommittee's perspective. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, a last shot at it, please, but not endless speeches. Who wants to go?
Chair, sorry. Age before
beauty. Do you want to say anything, Lucky?
Chair, what I wanted to say, I take JJ's point to a significant degree, but you will have complaints, as we've had in the past, that certain people are being investigated for planning a coup for political reasons. Yeah, it's an investigation, but there's allegations that it is being politically manipulated. Or similarly, there would be allegations that some people are not being investigated for political or whatever other improper reasons. So I think for me, the role of the board here, or whatever one calls this body, is to say, to deal with those allegations in cases where it starts to threaten the very integrity of this body, the very extent to which people believe what this body is saying or not. And for the body itself to say, you know, no, we're not doing that. We're not being manipulated. We're not doing it. Just lacks credibility. So I think for me the principle here is that what you do want is not for your run-of-the-mill case, not even for a serious organized crime case, unless there is a real serious allegation of a kind that threatens the integrity of the organization, will you deal, you know, will the board have a role to play? I think the role should have a significant discretion, the board or panel or whatever should have a significant role to determine what it decides or not to take on and look at. But, you know, it must be there to deal with those kinds of allegations where you don't want either the people who are running the organization or the politicians who have appointed them to be the ones to say, we've looked at it and it's okay, or we've not looked at it and it's not okay. You know, so for me, that is the issue of to preserve the integrity of an institution when there are allegations that threaten the very integrity of the institution, not just of a person or a particular individual. How do you deal with those allegations in a credible way? And, you know, all I can say is from bitter experience over the last few years, I think that there is a very real need for something like that. However one structures it and look at it, but there is a very, very real need. And I think, you know, if the Nicholson judgment in a sense confirms that. It says, you know, there are all these allegations that have been made. Has anybody ever been able to look at them properly? Say they true or not true? You know, and that is the difficulty that one sits with when you're dealing with, as this unit will, with very important and sensitive cases.
Just a short input from me. Not long speeches, Chair. I agree with I agree with Zili. Honourable members, our memories are still fresh about the allegations of political interference and all that regarding the work of the NPA.
I'm surprised nobody is saying, how do we in future have a mechanism as we imagine a new dispensation to deal with that? And that's the, for me, that is the question that should guide us. Then there's an important question raised about why do you have a board in respect of organized crime? You don't have a board in respect of many other forms of crime. Why do you have a unit in respect of organized crime? So your question is linked to that very question. It is because there is a recognition that organized crime requires some kind of specialization. And a unit that is going to be, I mean, let's face it, this unit is not, even looking at the way you imagine it, it's not just going to be another unit like any other unit within the SAPS. It's not going to be. It's a special kind of a unit. That's why you have a ministerial coordinating committee. You don't have a ministerial coordinating committee in respect of any other crimes. That's why you have a committee of officials. You do not have such mechanisms in respect of other crimes. And that's why you have a board. And for me, why this thing should be elevated to a level of a board, it is because it will have to deal even with complaints that emanate from the Ministerial Coordinating Committee, which is a very high-level structure. You can't have something that doesn't have a status at that level. You need to have something at that level. So for me, it is very important because this is a organized crime has an interface with corruption, high-level corruption. I mean, I don't need to tell you this. You know that better.
Look, very quickly, can I suggest a few things? One is that, Prince, contrary to what you're saying, I've been engaging with the co-chair, not to tell how smart she's looking. Actually, the same thing we've been talking about. That, you know, over the last few years, we have had this historical context. And uppermost in our minds as co-chairs is that. Secondly, to be fair, the NPA is battered at the moment. See, it doesn't matter whether it's got merit or it's got no substance. But out there, a substantial number of people, you go to Mbali, Babando or Nomu, or you go to Sabantu in my town of Mzunduzi, you go to Ezekeni in my constituency, they think that the NPA, I mean, it's really been battered. You can argue that we have contributed to it as a majority party. But whatever the situation is, NPA, everybody's saying, let's defend its autonomy. Let's ensure its interference is not impugned and undermined. The truth is, rightly or wrongly, the perception out there is one that is very negative. And it, people might do surveys and say, well, it's not the majority of South Africans, but it's a majority of activistic South Africans, people who carry social weight in this country. They belong to the majority party. They may be only a few hundred thousand in number, but they carry enormous social weight. So empirical surveys won't help us to get a sense of the importance and significance of the feelings that the NPA is just not being fair. So I don't know, the comrade co-chair might want to add, but my own feeling is that won't the technical experts see that a significant skepticism exists in the committee about the role of this board, and think through it carefully and come back and try to respond more, let's say, comprehensively to some of their concerns. So what I'd like to suggest, JG, if you'll give me a moment, is this board, I think you should teeter towards dropping that term. But for now, let's give it board stroke agency stroke panel. Idea we can feed into, I think we must move now fast on a technical subcommittee, which JJ convenes. He's the drafter stroke technical convener. We agreed on that in this committee. And the ANC chose JJ. So I think a meeting be held and that be finalized. But because JJ is so stridently opposed to it and giving the strongest arguments against it, I think the two chairs we'd like to be there when the meeting is held. So that, you know, we're slightly more, let's say, neutral, to be fair. So is that not a way forward? But we're not covering the same ground again. Yeah. Help towards process, yeah.
I think we're talking past each other a bit. The examples that Vili gives, and even the problems that the public has with the NPA,
have been problems with the DSO and the DSO investigations. So I think really what
Ginger, can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
I've just come from I went to a meeting this weekend for the 3 days. I was very surprised how people don't distinguish between the NPA and the DSO. Secondly, the Nicholson judgment actually speaks of the NPA.
Yeah.
Thirdly, you know this very committee. You can say what you like about the SACP's call, but it was unnecessary, quite frankly, because we've already taken a decision. Banara, where are you? As soon as the day opens, it's our committee. But we'd like to, by the way, because we've got to get to know each other so well, and we're working together, you know, we want to tell you, we'd like you to come when we look at the Nicholson judgment, Comrade Co-Chair, your committee, if you have time. We're thinking of very shortly now. Let's see progress. But by next week, we have asked the Parliament's Legal Services. We issued a statement, as you remember, Steve, on the Wednesday, long before the Central Committee met this weekend. We issued a statement to say that, A, we want the Legal Services to advise us on Nicholson's judgment for its implications for our oversight role. We acknowledge that the Nicholson judgment is being challenged legally and could well be overturned. At least, thirdly, that interpretations of what he said are subject to a variety of contestations. But we think, nevertheless, irrespective of what Nicholson said, it's time to consider what exactly does the Constitution mean and the NPA Act mean insofar as it relates to the Minister of Justice's relationship with the NPA. What does final responsibility mean? Should it be appropriate that the NDPP, in concurrence with the Minister, decides prosecuting policy which they table in Parliament? Shouldn't Parliament have a role in shaping prosecuting policy, the point I think Bulalani makes and Carroll makes? Then on the NDPP, we're saying, shouldn't some consideration be given to an independent panel appointed by Parliament, reflecting all the stakeholders, as Prince would say, appointing the NDPP, and then reporting to Parliament that it's done within the criteria that the law sets out, whatever law we decide on. And then if the person has to be removed, it's not the executive that removes the person, Parliament by maybe a simple majority. So all those things are up for discussion next week or a day. We'd like safety, those of you who can come to that meeting. So, Banara, are you on course to deliver your report?
Yes.
Yeah. So, what we are saying, JJ, it's just not on to say it's only the DSO.
But that the DSO are part of the NPA. So when people talk about the DSO currently, they're talking about the NPA because it's the same thing. And the problem with the NPA was that the NPA were also involved in investigations. Now, I think where we've got agreement, and definitely from the example that Willy gave, it was problems with investigation. And I think where there's common ground is there needs to be a complaints mechanism, integrity assurance, whatever, in particular with regard to the investigations. And how best that is dealt with then needs to be looked at. Should there be a separate board or some other structure? Are the existing structures, can they be beefed up? That kind of thing. But I think we need to be quite clear that we are not reproducing the scorpions in the SAPS bill. It's a police investigation unit that is being established here. So the decision about prosecutions does not get taken by this unit, it gets taken by the NPA. What we are then looking at with the board concept is complaints about the investigation. And I think, Chair, so that's what I'm trying to say, is I think there's a lot of common agreement around investigation problems, and that's really where it and that's where the problem I think came in with the confusion between the NPA and the DSO, because the NPA through the DSO were not just prosecuting, they were also investigating.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. Yeah, I think I will support the idea of giving the responsibility then to JJ's team to deal with everything that has been raised here. And then secondly, when I arrived here, you told us about different parties for different models. And the board model was on model two. On model two, which is the IFP. And these other opposition parties who opted for model one, which my party won't agree totally with Model 1, as you can see that there's no difference between Model 1 and what is happening now within the DSO, the way it is. And I thought maybe those small parties would then form part of JJ's team, and so that at least they can also identify some of the elements within Model 1 that we can put within Model 4. Because this board that you are discussing now, we are taking that from Model 2 into Model 4. So that at the end of the day, we should have something at least that all of us agreed upon. Instead of us as the ANC saying that we opt for Model 4, finish and last. So I think that idea of taking everybody on board in trying to then to improve on Model 4, as you have said that the DA said, only if we improve on Model 4. So these discussions that we are taking now, I think, is some sort of trying to improve on Model 4. There are, of course, some other issues that has been raised that some of us didn't understand the way it is understood today after Prince has said most of the things that he said here about even the review of the case review mechanism of the board. I understood it the other way. But after all these deliberations now, then I understand what is it all about. So there are some good points that has been raised as far as the board is concerned, and then there are those points that has got question marks. But I think if we give to JJ's team, of which I know that some of them, or most of them, has got a legal background, they can assist us in that regard. So that at the end of the day, at least we agree on one model as this committee. We did a lot together. We can't differ now at the end. We will pursue our party. If we see that everything is going to the direction that we want, because we all want the independence of the judiciary. We are all avoiding to have what we have presently. So thank you very much.
No, that's very consistent with what you're saying. Thank you. Okay, the next point that you think is not in Model 4 that you guys had worked on in your draft of 10 days ago? Just the co-chair and I discussed this. We don't have to sit till 4 o'clock. And if all goes well, we just need to look at each feature, provide guidelines to the technical subcommittee, and in fact, they can even meet this evening at the hotel if everybody's there. And a lot of us, I think, are going to be there tomorrow. And we must move, because next week, Tuesday, we're moving clause by clause. You know, I mean, really, we must discuss. And Comrade Maggie's right, it's a multi-party technical subcommittee. So, you know, we might even have time over the next 24, 48 hours to start at least doing two or three features completely, and we can start the drafting. So, Willie, quick, please.
I think the one thing that is not, I think is sort of implicit in Model 4, but I don't think is very strongly spelled out, but is, in a sense, how one tries to institutionalize the cooperation between the different departments that are stakeholders in this in this new body. And I think maybe that's where Prince and I went a little bit too far in putting in details late into the night. We really were not trying to slip things in, but it got very late in the night. So I think part of what we had suggested is that which is not spelled out here at the moment, but I think it's probably still implicit, is that one does look in the legislation at provisions that essentially say, as I think we've discussed here, that the different key departments would second somebody at a DDG-type level, roughly, on a full-time basis to be part of this body, that person will be supported by a full-time seconded personnel from that department in the new body. I think we would like to, I think for me the one area of uncertainty here is at the moment the way the committee has phrased the operational coordination committee is to some extent almost as though it's outside the new body. And in a sense, I think that's an issue we should debate, but you know, my sense is what you want to say is this: these permanently seconded people are in fact the operational coordinating committee sitting within the body on a day-to-day basis. They're not just meeting ad hoc. But so I think those are, for me, some of the things that one would need to discuss further and just see how you flesh out the details of those. I think it's quite important, given our experiences over the last few years, that I firmly believe we don't plan for the best, for the worst case scenario. We plan for the best case scenario. But I think that you want to create something that is robust enough, in a sense, also to withstand some of the worst case scenarios if they do come back again in the future. And so I think one wants to provide within the structure of the unit those kind of mechanisms that ensures that it works together on a day-to-day basis as much as possible.
Jay, just maybe on people who are permanently seconded, I really have doubts on the effectivity thereof, because a person is seconded permanently in another department actually, after a very short period of time, start to lose his roots within his mother department.
Sorry, can I just clarify? I said full-time, not permanent.
Well, full-time for that matter, because whenever you have a coordinating body, like a body of DGs who come together, it is exactly the fact that that person is in another department and what he's adding to that. If he actually, in fact, becomes a sort of part of the new structure, I think the value that the person can add to the structure actually get lost.
I'm not sure that I fully follow you, but if everyone else says it's fine, I'll speak to you over tea. I'm not sure that I fully follow you. Yeah, Prince?
Could I please persuade you to recall the discussion we had in the subcommittee when all of us agreed that the best scenario that we imagine is a situation where those who work in that unit become highly specialized in what they do. Now, and we said it is ideal, therefore, for officials who have been seconded full-time to that unit, to be there in that unit, so that on daily basis, this year they will be better than last year. Next year they will be better than this year in terms of their specialization. So that's why I wouldn't agree with his input, that the value of an official who is seconded would be lost. In my view, actually the very fact that the official is there full-time make the official to perform better on daily basis, and those who work there, they become to gel even more.
Okay. Secondments, how will it work? What do members think? Quick, please, Annelies. Pulirani, Skarigana, Pavan, Joe.
I think the issue that is raised there is, again, we're talking past one another again, because Philip is talking about the coordinating the OCC. And I agree with him in a way that if you take those people out of the the way Billy has explained it, I've clouded the issue a bit. If you take the people out of the, or whether it's full-time or permanent, if you take them out of the home department, the ability to coordinate between the OCU and their home department becomes difficult, because they later on seen as being in the OCU full-time and no longer representing their department. I think that's the danger Philip is alerting us to. I think what we need to look at, and I think that comes back to that discussion we had a while back, is some people being seconded on a full-time basis to this unit, and whether you should have your OCC, your coordinating committee, whether those people should actually be full-time, or whether they are people that are appointed to do exactly that by their department, to coordinate. So you can still have somebody in the unit who are there from SARS, who are there full-time from SARS to assist with investigations. But that might not be the same person that serves on the OCC on behalf of SARS.
Yeah, very clear understanding. We are very clear, Willie, maybe you misunderstood us. The OCC will not be the same people who are seconded. And what you are suggesting to us is a new idea. It's fine, but it's not what we understood. And I tend to agree with Annelies, actually. But for now, let's see others, Pulalani and Baba.
Yeah. No,
I think I was confused by Willy, because I thought that the OCC is a different matter and the secondment was a different matter. Because I said that the secondment is a person who comes from the department to come with an idea from the department, from Home Affairs, for instance. You mean deal with the matters that they are dealing with Home Affairs. But the OCC is a person that runs every day, it's a day-to-day basis. I thought that we were dealing with that.
Well, if you recall, we agreed that the OCC would have director generals who could delegate to a senior manager to constitute the OCC. And Bulalani intervened to say, no, don't do that, but unless you say on a permanent basis, because each time the DG is not available, he or she will say, you go today and you go tomorrow. So Bulalani, I recall, intervened to say, no, it should be a permanent thing. So I think we stick with that model, unless people are convinced by Willie's proposal. No. So there's no need to discuss that. We are going for that model. The next thing to say, he asked the question, are we agreeing that he says that different key departments, second at DDG level, on full-time basis, full-time seconded person. Now, the new IJ is DDG level. Why? I thought it's an expert in immigration, an expert in... I see your hand. You can keep it if you like up, but I see it. Isn't that what we agreed? Okay, JJ?
I don't know, you know, a lot of people can't see out of the side of their eye.
No, I know you always want to talk, so I'm very aware.
Okay.
I'm very
usefully
there. Okay. Quite frankly, he's a real star of the Justice Committee. Before he will sit down on the phone, you see that. But we are friends. And so I have seen
that. No, the point I wanted to make is we are setting up a framework. I don't think we in the legislation can say there shall be five people from SARS, one of whom shall be at a DDG level and shall be a woman who shall be over the age of 35. You know, that's
you're going too far. Can I just say something?
No,
some things go into the law.
Yes.
We've said repeatedly.
Yes.
Some things will go into our report.
Yeah.
And when her committee, well, we don't know whether her or he, after April next year, the way life goes on, the Safety and Security Committee will then say, hey, we didn't put that in the law,
yeah,
but this is what we intended.
Yeah.
Do it, and if you don't do it, we're going to... ask you to do it within six months.
But,
so some things will go into the court.
But Chair, what I'm really saying, I don't think we can go further in the law than talking about secondment of people from these different offices. I don't think we in the law can talk about the level they're at, the numbers of people. I think those are operational issues. And obviously, according to the nature of the crimes, so you're going to have growth or recession of staff from different areas.
Remember, I think we want to be very clear. Parliament is no more going to be what it used to be for a period. And we are all in our committees saying we want to have a greater say on what the executive does. So some things we'll not put in law, we'll put in our report. And we will monitor. The Safety and Security Committee will monitor. And I think we must take this thing as far as we can without being over-prescriptive. I think that was our approach until now. So while JJ is correct, I think he's acutely aware that we need to put in our report certain things. So we're agreeing that drop this thing of DDG level. Believe we don't agree with you on your second characteristic of the multidisciplinary approach either. Is there anything else on the multidisciplinary approach that we need to know? Good. On the issue of prosecutors, are we clear? Is there anything else you want to add, guys? Because you're all guys, I see. So this is a singular sense. Gary, Plantla, Willie, and Prince are the guys. The gang of four. What does the gang say? Musketeers. Musketeers are much more, let's say, less pernicious.
I was thinking of
Post-Mar, meaning Post-Mar gang of four.
Yeah.
Why?
No, well, I mean, that's the gang of four.
Yeah, I know that's the gang of four. That's what I mean.
They're not the gang of four.
They're the post-mortem gang of four. Okay, so... Okay, on multidisciplinary approach, can we go through other issues that you say are lacking in Model 4? The
that you think could strengthen it by some of the technical work you've done. Before I quickly go through each characteristic and add for you guys, your technical committee, to finalize. Nothing, Prince?
Nothing.
Lancelot? Gary? Okay, so while Willie thinks, can we quickly go through the characteristics and guide the mandate the technical committee to do? Okay, the first characteristic we're clear about is located within the SAPS, multidisciplinary approach is fine. No separate crime intelligence function, but will work at SAPS and other intelligence. That's just a craft. Is that right, JJ? There's nothing we want to add there. Well, I've done a summary for our own internal party structures, which you don't have, but basically I'm dealing with all the characteristics. I just did this yesterday in a whiff. No, not my other party. But look, obviously we've agreed on there's no separate crime intelligence function, but we'll work with SAPS and other intelligence agencies. In that regard, do you want to add anything, JJ and others? Good. Okay. Head appointed by the minister after consultation with SAPS National Commissioner. Question now here is, JJ, just remind us, you had said in a study group it will mean an amendment to the land lease. You said an amendment to the SAPS Act because all the commissioners, you can't have the deputy commissioner dealing with OCU to be appointed in a separate way from the national commissioner. JJ, Annalise, help. What do we want to put in there? I haven't gone through my notes, but I recall you people had raised issues there.
Look, my understanding was we were going to check what the SAPS Act was saying at the moment. We are amending the SAPS Act, so we can do anything we want for the appointment mechanism for the head of this unit. But I thought the issue was to check what was the SAPS Act actually saying. And I don't know if we'd finalize that issue in terms of is there a role and what is the role for Parliament in the appointment.
To finalize it now, can I just say, we don't seek permission from the Minister, we Parliament. We did, as a courtesy, brief the Minister in which direction we are going so that he can brief you also. And he is acutely aware that we are proposing as Parliament that this be done. Now, there are some things that are the executive purview and parade, and we're slightly careful because in any democracy, some things, executive exists to be executing. So we did brief him, and I think he was pretty cool about it. Is that right, Meg? Yeah, he was pretty cool about it. We don't need his permission particularly because the act belongs to us.
Which minister?
Minister of Safety and Security, needless to say. Not the Minister of Environment.
No, the old one. The new one.
Ah, indeed, that's the point you're making. Oh, yes. Well, it doesn't really matter. We're not going back to the new minister to brief him. We'll brief him, I see your point. Oh, good, okay. Yeah, actually, the new minister was Chief Whip, and we did brief him before the caucus meeting last Thursday.
Anyway, both of us are under new ministry.
Yeah, that's right. Shruti as well. I'll desist JJ from saying anything, but the new minister as well, all we do is we brief him in justice. He was sitting in caucus in any case, both ministers, and, they know what's going on. Okay, on the issue of can we just mandate the technical committee to effect the necessary amendment to the SAPS Act as we agreed and as we are confirming in this committee? Secondly, on the role of Parliament, what would happen if the head is appointed by the minister after consultation with the SAPS commissioner, they just report to Parliament, is that correct? That's all. What can we do in that situation? JJ, help us. What happens in similar cases?
Look, I think the issue was basically whether one wanted to go and look at something like the ICD, not that it helped the ICD much, where Parliament... where Parliament, I think, approves the appointment or something. Does one want to look at that? I think we can flesh it out. I mean, as I said, with the ICD, it didn't necessarily have to.
Remember, Mulalani's not happy about us approving, is that right? What was your proposal?
Chair, I think it will be a serious compromise because I don't see a role for Parliament, honestly. I think this is an executive function. But the compromise I think we can have is that it might just report to Parliament. But for Parliament...
If we don't like the person appointed, can we do anything?
That is the problem. That's why I don't see any role. It's an executive function.
Okay.
Chairperson, I agree with Bilalani because your co-chair will tell you that you're going to have a problem because the commissioner is also appointed by the executive, obviously. And the Parliament's role, if I remember correctly, Chair, Parliament are also informed by the Minister afterwards. The Minister comes to us, he says, this is the person we're going to appoint, this is the CV of the person, and we take note of that. Now, I can't see us having a role to play with a Deputy National Commissioner if we don't play that role with the Commissioner.
Oh, yes, Lord, we want, but yeah. I get your point. Carol?
But, Chair, didn't we also say that there are other Deputy National Commissioners in SAPS? And that we said that we would follow exactly the same appointment.
We agreed on that.
We didn't want to elevate
it. Yeah, we agreed on that. So yeah. Now we're talking about the role of Parliament now. It could apply to all of them, or none of them. Yeah.
But, you know, remember that the National Commissioner and the head of this unit have to have a good working relationship. So if you start elevating the one, you're not going to have that integrated approach. Yeah.
You can word it accordingly. Vetting of employees. We said things in the earlier draft about of the document was something like regular vetting and so on. Now, Billy, you said a lot. Quickly table it so we can adopt it here and get you to craft it, all of you. What did you say about vetting of employees? You said, firstly, we should have vetting before you appoint people by the appropriate intelligence agencies, correct? Then you said you must have integrity mechanisms. I haven't looked at my notes, man, but you know what you said. Quickly, please, so we can adopt it and then ask you guys to move on it.
Chair, I think the broad suggestion was that the law should, I'm not sure if it should talk about specific mechanisms, but it should provide for stricter vetting mechanisms for members of this unit. And, you know, so I think some of the measures that one can look at would be random lie detector tests, proactive integrity testing by setting traps for members of the unit and seeing if they succumb to temptation. I don't think those things should be written into the law, but I think what the law should authorize is for more intrusive measures to be used.
Can you look at that, JJ? I would really suggest quite strongly that here, because vetting has been such a controversial issue, JJ and others, that there's no harm, we've done it in other bills, that we have certain property rates bill with this endless argument, Maggie, about whether we should put the mechanisms in of how you do property rating. And finally we decided yes. We put in including computer assisted master appraisal. Not that municipal are not watching it, but we did put all the mechanisms down. So I don't think we should rule it out. Can we mandate you people to find a balance, JJ?
There's two issues. There's the vetting, and then there's integrity mechanisms. Now, the vetting, unlike the property rates bill, where there's no other property rates bill, there's existing legislation on vetting. So I think it would be checking at what level is one wanting that vetting at and making use of that. But not
that, yeah, we meant it either.
Then I think the issue that Billy raises, which is useful, of the integrity checks. I mean, look, I don't know how much detail one wants to go into. One could spell out the principle and then leave it up to the minister in regulation. You know, but it would be things like, I don't know, and I don't know enough about the public service or the police or the prosecutors. Do they have to have assets registers, et cetera, et cetera? But you know, the one might be to say, look, we leave it broad, we set out the principle, and then we empower the minister by regulation to define mechanisms along the line that Willie is talking about, and we say in our report that we want to know exactly what those are and we want their effectiveness reviewed.
Yeah, but we don't want to do what's happened. We don't want to leave too much of latitude to the ministers. They don't do it. We're not talking about the prison minister necessarily, ministers in general all over the world. Okay? They don't do it. So I really think we must steer the legislation in the direction of being prescriptive and then correlate, without being over-prescriptive, the correlation or correlate of that is Parliament's Safety and Security Committee must actually be much more activistic in its oversight. So, Vunalani?
I would propose two things. One, that regulations be approved by Parliament. And then two, we must look at, but it might be in our report, that this integrity issue over time be extended to all members of the South African Police Services. Over time, not now, but over time, the integrity, yes.
Okay. The next thing is the Interministerial Coordinating Committee. Let me remind you of the issues here. One, the Minister of Safety and Security will chair. Do we want to have a deputy chair? Point two is, Annelies raised this point, which I thought has a lot of credence. She said, look, to expect them to meet four times a year as this big group, the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Home Affairs, blah, 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 ain't going to work. So what we should put in the law is the ministers in all these departments that are relevant will meet at least once a year, and then a smaller team comprising the Minister of Safety and Security and relevant ministers. So two or three ministers, not all of them. I like what Annelies said. I don't know what other people feel. Over then to the members.
What is relevant ministers?
Meaning like crime intelligence, about intelligence and or, I would imagine, Minister of Justice and or that sort of thing. At different times it may be slightly different. You see, it also depends if you have a minister and a deputy minister and those sort of things. So I don't think we can be too prescriptive, but I think you get the drift. The aim would be, we must put in the law, Minister of Safety and Security is the chair. Point two, at least once a year, all the relevant ministers must meet. But at least three other times a year, the interministerial committee or subcommittee within the interministerial committee, do what you want to say, find a way out of making it torturously prescriptive, will meet. Are we agreeing on that? The only question I want to ask is, yes,
for Mr. Glover's point, you won't be saying relevant ministers, you'll be listing the ministers.
Bagwadeshi?
I'm not really comfortable as a person about this once a year. Because if ministers attend cabinet, and they do attend every Wednesday, they do attend subcommittee meetings, what makes them not to attend it is four times a year?
Chairperson, the point that was just that we, from past experience, we know it didn't happen, the ministerial committee. We've got the same situation in defense, where you also have a committee, and Mr. Law was well aware of that as well, which is also not meeting. So what we are saying is that there's got to be a committee, and that's the one that we've got to determine, most probably amongst the cluster, a committee of ministers that meets at least four times a year. But then the broader one can meet once a year, the one that will include others as well, like the Minister of Finance, etc.
Global, I'll come back to you, Prince, and Prince of.
Thank you. I think I understand where Bulalan comes from, because, and I understand what Annelies is saying. Once a year, sometimes it can be February, and then they will meet in next February, when some of them, some will be dead or some will won't be alive and so on. No, I'm always like that. Some have resigned or something like that. It cannot be four times a year. They have to have somebody that will meet four times a year. But the whole group cannot meet four times a year. Just look at the time of the whole group, but it can't be once a year. Because once a year, it's going to make it unworkable, really.
Can't we compromise at least twice a year and then at least four times a year? Bulalani?
We can go for twice a year.
Yeah. Bulalani, compromise, please, man.
For the whole
or jump in the lake, because you're only one person. Compromise or jump in the lake. I mean, you know, I lose out a lot, Bulalani, on very good ideas. Reconcile that World Socialism is not pending. Bulalani, it's torn me apart and debilitated me since the age of 22. When I was 18, I thought World Socialism was on the order.
No, not intimidated. No, not intimidated, the person. I think I can only submit myself to a majority vote. To compromise, I think it's very difficult. I can submit myself to a majority decision. No, because that person, I think we have been creating committees without clear, proper evaluation mechanisms. I think that is one. So if people are forced to meet in terms of the law and they don't meet, they're breaking the law. Mammeke will do that. My problem, Chairperson, is that you will be having this coordinating committee, the operational coordinating committee, and having those people there, there can be a lot of things that will require attention of these people. And if they will only meet twice to two times a year, I think we'll just be legislating for a disaster. But if the majority feels otherwise, to compromise is difficult, but I would abide by your decision.
I just think the last sentence is slightly melodramatic. The legislation, what did you say? We're legislating for disaster. It's too ghastly to contemplate it. But for the rest, it's a good argument he's got, which is, if the OCC is meeting regularly, their political principles are only meeting twice a year, so there's a disjunction. It's a good argument. Okay, come on.
I'll think that they should be meeting twice a year and in times where emergencies rise or when the need rises.
Yeah. It covers that. It's just three times in a leap year. Sorry, Prince.
I don't think I have to say anything on this one, but I've been listening, Chair, and trying to get the wisdom of those who say they should not meet once per quarter. I'm not sure if I've gotten that, because even if you read, when you read the campaign, the commission, the question of time, that they did not have time, the ministers, to meet, it's not part of the reasons why they did not meet. Unless if I'm persuaded otherwise, it sounds reasonable to me that they meet at least once per quarter, that is four times per year. But I leave that to those who have the right to vote and submit.
No, you're being very disingenuous. You say you shouldn't say anything, and then you say exactly what you say, and then you say you shouldn't say what you said. No, you're a South African, right, Prince? So you have a right to speak here. That's why we brought you in. In fact, we value, by the way, enormously what you say, needless to say. So let's do this. For now, I think the committee feels we should seriously consider at least twice a year, but we don't foreclose the argument. We listen to what Bulalani and Prince are saying. We ask the technical committee to apply its mind and come back to us. What is your theory about Kampepe's subtext, that the reason people didn't meet wasn't that they didn't have the time, it was they didn't have the will? Is that her argument?
Look, you have a situation where problems accumulate with regard to the work of the unit, and ministers are not meeting. If they were meeting, they would have, in those meetings, they would have had to confront those problems and deal with them. Now, I would imagine that this committee would want to avoid that, to make these ministers meet regularly, at least once per quarter, in order not to allow problems to accumulate with regard to the work of the unit. And that is at the core of the concern of Judge Kampepe.
But what is the reason for them not meeting? What was her explanation? Not that they didn't have time, but they were running away from the work. So what do you think? I'm asking you.
I was assuming that members of the committee read Judge Kampepe's report. But it was a political conflict, Chair, to be frank. Yeah.
Okay, that's right. Correct. Let's move on, Bulalani and Liz, yes?
Can I just make a suggestion that we also look at the bill that was passed, I think, on Friday, on the improved NCACC measures in defense? Because I think there's some clear measures that they brought in and to ensure that that committee actually meets, and maybe we can adopt some of them.
Very good proposal. Bulalani? I was just going to ask, normally in justice, Comrade Chair, whoever raises the point, we ask them to do it, but now I didn't want to. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Bulalani?
Chair, I think since we're establishing a committee, normal rules of committees should apply, which means that there must be a quorum. If there are five ministers, at least so that as a deadlock-breaking mechanism. Because if, for instance, when problems involving justice will arise, then the chairperson will meet the Minister of Justice. It might create problems when the bigger committee meets. And that is what we experience with the interception and monitoring. That is why I will still support my prints that we should look at regular meetings once per quarter to deal with all those problems, because
sorry, we're saying one that that we leave this issue for the technical committee to sort out. That at this stage, the majority view is that at least two times a year, but we don't completely close the argument. Then we will have a provision that this committee, interministerial committee, via its chairperson, reports to Parliament. Then we are saying that, is there a need to put quorums and so on in the law? I don't think so, Bolalani. Yeah, they will never sit. So I don't think we're going to put that in. If we want to put in our report, we can. Then can we move on to the next thing, Interdepartmental Coordinating Committee? What needs to be amplified here? How often do they meet, etc.? Their tasks are very clear. The Interministerial Committee, we take the section of the NPA Act, right? And we just slap all of that in, or we refer to the NPA Act. They must do exactly what the NPA Act requires them to do. We agreed on that. On the Interdepartmental Coordinating Committee, we did set out it must draft a strategic plan and so on. One of our documents has got that. Can we just adopt that? Is there anything else? What else should the IDCC do? We can call it OCC, sorry. Yeah, OCC. What else does OCC do? It must deal with the day-to-day operational coordination. As I remember, it will be composed of the DG and or, not and or a delegated representative of a senior manager who's permanently there. As I remember, we agreed on these people will deal with the operational matters related to interdepartmental coordination and report regularly to the IMCC. Anything else, members? Can you remember from your notes? Christine, you're here. You've been here all the time. Is there anything else you remember we agreed on? Good. Okay. Christine, you can't speak, eh? I mean, you're here to speak. Yeah. Okay. And that's your job. MPC's come in now, but he's been in and out, so I don't think he's always able, unfortunately, because he's had other responsibilities to sort of say what Christine, I think, is able to say because she's been to every meeting. Right. Let's move on. Mechanism to ensure no political bias. Right. Anything here? How are we going to do this? Discussion around it. Yeah, this covers the next one as well, complaints mechanism. Then the next one is adequate budget and resources. That will have to go into our report, but we should put insofar, JJ, as it's possible, Johan, Mr. Jacob, Commissioner Jacob, something about taking the thing seriously and should have appropriate budgeting. I don't know if we can put that in law, but we should try. Effective and regular parliamentary oversight, that must be put in there. We have the minister table in Parliament, the name of the person appointed. We have a meeting four times a year with the OCU, one of which is the annual report when the SAPS comes. JJ will have to look into whether, I don't know what Maggie feels, and this is where the safety and security people can discuss this. We can only offer guidance, I don't know, as justice people. But it just seems to me, JJ, have you got any experience where, like you see, the co-chair, when it comes to the NPA, they report to us, right, with the annual report. Interesting, the SIU, you do a separate report, but it comes like almost together with the NPA report. Then within the NPA report, you have a section on the DSO. Look at all the permutations. And I think Comrade Maggie should, you know, with her experience, guide a lot of this about how exactly will the specific report of the DSO be treated. Personally, Comrade Maggie, my own feeling is it should be a separate report, but I don't know. You can, you know, think this through. Then the next issue is comprehensive transitional provisions. Now here, we must be very clear, a lot of work has to be done. And we'll be guided to some extent by the input we get tomorrow at the DSO and on Thursday at the SAPS. But on this area, we are utterly clear, Steve Swart made the point, no cases must be impeded. And I think the clarity on that has to be absolutely 100%. Moreover, it must be stronger than currently is in the bill. On staff budget assets, can we leave that to the technical experts to deal with? But do members who will not constitute part of this multi-party technical committee, it's the same subcommittee that met 2 weeks ago, exactly the same people. But remember, a subcommittee is open to any member of these committees who wants to come. So, what do members particularly outside the subcommittee want to say about guiding the subcommittee on transitional provisions, please? You can feed your ideas into JJ, right? Let's move on. We must put in a provision, surely we've agreed, that the model must be looked at within 3 years of implementation. But if you're very careful in how we couch that, JJ, we're not going to overhaul anything. We're going to just see whether further improvements are necessary.
Would that not be something for the report rather than the
agreed that it'll be in the... Well, we can change our view, but I'm utterly clear it should be there. Yeah, that's the point Carol made the last time round. Good. Shall we then say that we've now going to deal quickly with the program very quickly. The subcommittee will have to meet and finish its work. Right. Firstly, who's the subcommittee? It's the committee that met 2 weeks ago, the same subcommittee, except it's chaired by you. No. By you, because a lot of it is very technical. And also, when I put my hand up, you can ignore me. But unlike you, I won't keep my hand up all the time. I'm teasing you. But I think JJ must deal with that. We'll go, but, you know, you mandate it by the committee. And if we can come, we come. If we can't, we can't. But for 2 years, we'll try to be at all the meetings. I would strongly suggest that by Tuesday morning, you finish as much work as possible, or even that we allocate Tuesday solely to the subcommittee. And then we meet in the committee on Wednesday and Thursday. Shall we just do that? Because, you know, on Monday we might have a ANC, JJ, an ANC committee meeting to discuss various issues related to safety and security in Johannesburg. But, okay, Tuesday next week the subcommittee will meet from 10 o'clock to whatever time. Wednesday the open committee meets from 10 o'clock to forever. Thursday, open committee meeting 10 o'clock to forever. In the meanwhile, JJ will coordinate
the subcommittee. Is it a closed meeting or what?
Closed meeting, yeah. But Wednesday and Thursday, the subcommittee must start its work immediately today. And certain sections of the bill, Johan and Jacobs must be mandated, and Prince will fall away from drafting. He's not a lawyer, Prince, are you? So then the drafting team are the lawyers. That means Johan, Philip, Willie, and Plant Life is available. Okay? But you can go to the meetings.
To say I've drafted many things in my life.
No, legal drafting, not legal. Yeah, press statements. Okay, so can we plead that you begin today, actually? In fact, there's no reason why you can't meet from 2 to 4, because the flights, I think, will be difficult. Or can we change the world? Coming to that in a moment. Because Maggie, I think, feels we should leave a bit early, sorry? But you were meant to be at 4. All right, I think we should leave earlier, yeah.
Can I tell you when to leave? Can the chairperson tell you when to leave?
Okay. Yes, the chairperson can do that if you are going to leave early.
No, this is not safety and security. This is a joint committee, please behave. lunch is ready. Old assembly dining room, immediately when we get out of this place. And then for the airport, then we'll be leaving at 15:45, which is 4:15. We must all be at the poor days at 15:45, 4:15. Our flight is after 6. We are a group of 21 people. So it's 6:30. There is a space for everybody in that flight. So if you want to leave earlier, Babantlovu, for an earlier flight, there is no harm in that. You can do that. But the flight that we are booked in is 6:30. In order for us to arrive in what is this place? Centurion Lake Hotel, because the transport will collect us from OR to Centurion Lake Hotel. We are all accommodated there. So that's why I'm saying, please let us adhere to this time. Because the problem is where we are going, because the transport will take us all at one point. That's fine. Okay. And then, Comrade Chair, I think since Commissioner Jacobs will be part of this drafting team, you raised the issue about the reporting of SAPs when it comes to this SAP program. This is going to be a SAP program because it says we said in Model 4 it's a division. So we get the report from the accounting officer, which is the national commissioner, who will report on behalf of all those sub-programs. But the difference is on operational issues, then we invite the unit on operations. But when it comes to budget and utilization and everything, the accounting officer is the national commissioner, unless then you want to change that. But it is how it is within SAPs at the moment. Okay.
And then the next thing is, can we suggest that by the following week, Tuesday, we should be more or less finished with the bill and vote on it on the Wednesday after that? Because, you see, you can start crafting the bill now. Certain sections we've already agreed to. There's no need for a technical subcommittee, right? And, JJ, can you pull your subcommittee, use the same staff? Bonani is focusing mainly on this bill. Lolly's working on criminal procedure and so on. And there's Jeremy Michaels, so you can, you know, draw on staff and move on it. Then, now, as for the visits, let's just remind us what we're doing. And unfortunately, Comrade Maggie and I, she was stuck in a meeting most of yesterday and so on, so she'll speak if she disagrees with anything. But you have got, in other words, those of you who want to leave early, Baba, the problem's going to be we're stuck at the other end. You'll be waiting in Johannesburg Airport for the rest, or Tambo Airport for us to come. So you can take an earlier flight, but regrettably, because it's such a big group, we can't change 21 flights now for an earlier time. So we're stuck, okay. Then the next quick thing is you've all got your e-tickets, right? And so on, and you will, those of you, like some of us are driving to the airport. If you haven't, then Jeremy Michaels will give it to you. Yeah. Okay. So basically, what we're going to do is tomorrow, let's remember why we're going. The first thing is that we are going to brief the DSO and the SAPS, particularly the units that are from the SAPS that deal with organized crime. Firstly, we're going to report to them that we have decided to go for this improved DPCI model and quickly go through the key features. Then secondly, what we're going to do is hear them on what they have to say about the model by pointing out also that a senior representative of theirs, in fact two senior representatives of theirs, have been constantly involved in negotiating with the committee. So they have been fully represented, Comrade Chair, the NPA and the DSO. In fact, they've had excellent representatives, and we'll praise them. They fought for their arguments. They lost out on some things, but the DSO participated fully. And maybe, then after that, once we report to them, we hear them. Now, comrades and friends, I think this is their parliament too. Their representatives tried their best, but they may not have won many things, and those people will be upset. And I think we should just hear them. If they get emotional and they shout at us, it's fine. This is their parliament. They are civil servants. They feel disgruntled. I think we must just listen to them. Then what we have to do is try to persuade them that, you know, we are taking this route, and it's more important for them now to help us on the technical issues of enhancing the Model 4 and in particular assisting us with the transitional mechanisms. And I think what we need to tell them in some way or another, the two, three chairs in particular, I don't know if Baba Mokoena is here, I think it's our job mainly, but everybody, to assure them that those who are loyal South Africans, who work hard, who want to serve the state, who are not interested in being drawn into politics, we value and respect them. And we want them to stay. And we are going the next day to the SAPS, and Comrade Maggie is the chair of the relevant committee, and she's going to persuade the SAPS to receive these people with open arms and, you know, forget past rivalries. We one country, one state. Crime is something we're all concerned about. So, you know, the chair of safety and security will take primary responsibility for Thursday, and she will also speak to the NPA. Obviously, Comrade Mokoena and I will take primary responsibility for tomorrow, because at this stage, DSO falls within justice. And
what we want to say to them is that we understand the anxieties and frustrations, but it's not the end of the world. And we think we can make this a powerful unit. They mustn't prejudge it. That we're going the next day, and Comrade Maggie can speak, and those who say about how we're going to go to the SAPS and also speak to them. So as far as tomorrow goes, we have been engaging. I've been speaking regularly to DSO officials, and what I tried to, I told Maggie last night over the, she was driving though, I don't remember, don't know how much she was able to hear me, but we're suggesting that from 9 to 10 tomorrow, we meet with officials of the DSO, and they can also brief us on some of the frustrations and so on, so we can better prepare. Then from 10 to 1 or so, we meet the entire staff, and representatives of the staff from the various provincial offices, I gather, are going to be there. So we hear them, and that's the main reason we're going to meet the staff. The senior technicians, they can always come here. And if it means spilling over 1 o'clock, Comrade Maggie, I think the main thing is to reach out to the average staff member. We should continue beyond 1 and shorten the afternoon meeting. Then in the afternoon, we're meeting with elected representatives of the staff and the senior managers, and then we look carefully at transitional provisions. And JJ, you will lead us on that and the technical experts. So that's the program for tomorrow. Comrade Maggie and Jeremy have been dealing with Thursday, and I got a phone call from somebody from SAPS who couldn't reach Maggie this morning, and I said, look, Comrade Maggie will bring him today. But my understanding was that we would meet with on Thursday with the managers of SAPS, but very importantly, the staff of the OCU and Crime Intelligence Unit were available so that Comrade Maggie can manage them to understand. We're not going to allow this. I'm sure the safety, that people must be vindictive and so on. And let's think of ways of, you know, reaching out to the DSO from the SAPS side. I don't know, symbolic things and so on. That Comrade Maggie is best able to deal with that. I think she's been very preoccupied yesterday, and she's going to work with Raymond Lala, Commissioner Phillips, and so on. Sorry? I don't know if you're our aim is to hear people, really. And we're not going there, as Peter would say, just for the... What would he say if he was here? Let me see. Oh, we're going through the motions. It's extreme cynicism. We really want to retain as many people as we want. And we want the SAPS to lift themselves above themselves. It's not easy.
Yes, I must say I disagree with the sentiments Peter expressed. I think there's a genuine sincerity to go out and meet and the process that has been...
It is, but that's the sort of thing he would say.
But just to say that on this process, one of the important aspects to me is the costs that have already been incurred in training DSO officials, the investment that the state has already made in them, and that would be a prime motivation for them to stay and for us to try to encourage them, subject to vetting and all other processes. But also, there would be frustration, there would be a sense of possible anxiety from both units as to incorporation and that type of thing. So I think it's a very valuable process. And I have no doubt of the sincerity that it's embarked upon us. Thank you.
Comrade Coaches said, whatever our differences, we should try to get a model that even if you're going to challenge wherever you want to and so on, it's reasonably consensual despite our differences. Similarly, it carries a lot more weight. We can't prescribe to you. If opposition members say, look, we are very unhappy with this decision, but we have to live with it, and whatever our differences with the ANC on this matter, we really feel that you should. It would be wonderful if the DA said that. I know Steve always comes to the party. I know Baba will. But it's wonderful for the DA to say it, but we can't prescribe to them. And unfortunately, Dr. Delport's not going to be there. He's great at that sort of thing. He will say, you know, we disagree, but we're one country and so on. But we can't prescribe to Kola Barnard, obviously. Perhaps you can speak to over the phone. I will speak to Len Jobert. And so on. Then finally, comrades, we have a meeting at 1 o'clock for those of you who have been invited. I don't know if there's a lunch there. I understood there will be lunch there. So I'll check now very quickly and then let you know. It doesn't include you, Comrade Carol. Those of you who didn't get the SMS, don't ask, because really it saves you time. If you want to replace us, it's great. It's a fundamentally boring meeting, but we have to be there at 1 o'clock. No. The rest of you will have lunch, a nicer lunch, no doubt. in the whole assembly chamber. But if there's no lunch there, then we quickly go and eat.
Everybody. There is lunch for everybody, all the assembly chamber.
Good.
Everybody.
Thank
I
you
mean,
all.
The dining hall.
Yes, now.
Yeah.